And welcome back to Public Eye Radio on CFAX 1070, Victoria's News Authority. I'm your host, Sean Holman, editor of Public Eye Online, broadcasting from British Columbia's capital city and rebroadcasting on Kootenai Co-op Radio. Last year, the provincial government promised to consult with British Columbians about new statutory protections to further safeguard the environment from cosmetic chemical pesticides. And the government didn't say what those new statutory protections would be, but in Ontario, the government has banned cosmetic pesticides, a measure the West Coast Environmental Law Society has said enjoys a high level of support from British Columbians. But not everyone is supportive of a ban or thinks it's even necessary. Among them is CropLife Canada, the association representing companies that develop, manufacture, and distribute pesticides. And joining me to discuss the industry's position is its regulatory affairs director, Pierre Patel. Good morning, Pierre.
Good morning, Sean.
So why shouldn't there be a ban? I guess that's the first question.
Well, I think part of the issue is that these bans that ignore the scientific evidence that goes into regulating these products actually end up putting people in more jeopardy because people are looking for tools to use to control a variety of these pests, and without knowing which products to use and without federally regulated products available to them, they often turn to alternatives that are not assessed.
Right. So you're speaking specifically about the fact that cosmetic pesticides go through a federal government testing process to ensure their safety.
Yeah, and it doesn't matter whether it's an agricultural product or a product for your home or industrial rights of way. These products are all assessed by Health Canada through a very rigorous process. And the products that come out at the end are assessed for that use. So for homeowners that are buying product off the shelf, that specific use has been assessed, and the safety of that product is assured.
Right. Now, you say that if those kind of products aren't available, then people could turn to other unsafe measures. What exactly are you specifically talking about there?
Well, we've seen Health Canada release an advisory last year sort of alerting people to the fact that, you know, just because something is homemade or natural, it doesn't mean it's safe, and this is available on their website. And it basically cautions people against some of these internet recipes for controlling a variety of pests, anything from boiling rhubarb leaves to, you know, using nicotine solutions, all these things that are quote-unquote natural but compose a very serious threat. And it's not just the fact of people using alternative products. It's also in terms of research and development in Canada. And, I mean, our members rely on a scientific process to determine which products we invest in and bring to market, and whether it's a natural biological product or a synthetic chemical, we still need the parameters so we understand what the rules are in order to bring these products to market.
Sure. Wouldn't it be reasonable, though, if the provincial government did decide to go ahead with a cosmetic pesticide ban, that they then do some public education, talking to British Columbians about what are appropriate alternatives for those chemicals?
Well, this is a bit of the issue that we have with some of the positions that our detractors take, is that all these products, whether they call them alternatives or synthetic chemicals, they're all assessed by Health Canada using the same rules. And so whether a product was derived synthetically or whether it was derived from a plant or other source, it doesn't matter. They all have inherent toxicity. They have inherent hazards that need to be addressed. They need to be made sure that people using those products aren't put into any risk, any unacceptable risk. And so that's the issue, that it doesn't matter whether it's synthetic or natural. It has to be assessed, and it has to be safe for people to use.
Right. Now, speaking of safety, the Canadian Cancer Society, which is supporting a ban, says there is evidence to show a possible link between cosmetic pesticides and cancer. I'm wondering, do you dispute that evidence then?
Absolutely. And in fact, Health Canada has some question and answer section on their website dealing with pesticides, and it specifically addresses some of these allegations about cancer and other illnesses. And they're quite pointed in their comments about the fact that they assess all of the credible evidence in determining whether a product is acceptable, and they address all of the health issues that may be possible by putting in mitigation measures, so making sure that products that do pose a higher risk are only accessible, you know, through licensed technicians or with proper protective equipment. Products that are used by the homeowner for that market, you know, cannot pose an acceptable risk, including cancer and all the other diseases that are talked about.
Right. So have you talked to the Canadian Cancer Society about your concerns, about the industry's concerns? Have you had that discussion with them saying, well, you know, look, we just disagree, and why are you taking this position?
Absolutely. We've had a number of meetings, and we've tried to come up with some middle ground, and I think it varies a little bit by provincial chapter as to, you know, their positioning. But from a national perspective, you know, one of the views that Cancer Society, you know, obviously we take a different view on this subject, but mm-hmm. one of the things they agree by the sounds of it is that, you know, what we need to decide on what the criteria are, and which is to my point earlier, whether it's synthetic or natural, we need to know what the game rules are. And, you know, today's list of banned products, you know, what about tomorrow? What about new products that are in the pipeline? Where will they fall out? And so the end result is that companies, whether they're, you know, investigating an agricultural product or a homeowner use product, without that scientific rule book, then, you know, the innovation and the science, scientific R&D in Canada will just wither away.
Right. But what have they said when you've raised the concern that you believe their information, their positioning is simply wrong when it comes to whether there's a possible link between cosmetic pesticides and cancer?
Well, I mean, obviously, what we say to them is viewed as biased in cases. But we've asked them to, you know, have you talked to the experts at Health Canada? There's 350 scientists at Health Canada that their only job is assessing pesticides. They don't look at drugs or home other products. They just assess pesticides. And these are the experts. These are toxicologists and the weed scientists, et cetera. And we don't know if they've reached out to them and asked those specific questions they've had. I know we've been on different fora together with Health Canada in the audience, and a lot of the allegations or questions raised by the Cancer Society are directly addressed by Health Canada experts, but it doesn't seem to sway their position, and I'm not sure why that is.
So if the Canadian Cancer Society and their supporting research is so wrong, why don't you guys just sue them for defamation, for example? Because obviously this is having a pretty significant impact on your industry.
Well, I mean, I don't think I'll get into any kind of legal discussion, but I think what, you know, there's a lot of studies out there, and some of them are proper peer-reviewed scientific studies. Others are more opinion pieces, and a lot of these keep getting recirculated and recycled. And in fact, if I, you know, I look at a number of different positions on from our detractors, and I see the same kind of comments resurfacing, and they refer to a Ontario College of Family Physicians study from 2004 quite frequently. Well, that study was, you know, roundly dismissed by most experts, and including the United Kingdom's Pesticide Safety Directorate. Even Health Canada itself said, yes, we looked at it, and we found their conclusions, you know, exaggerated or too strong. The correlations they drew were way too strong based on the evidence.
Right. So why then do you think they've taken this position? Why do you think environmental groups, why do you think the Canadian Cancer Society, why have all of these people come out so strongly against cosmetic pesticides if indeed the research is flawed?
Well, and again, all I can do is speculate. But,
sure, absolutely. But this is talk radio. That's the whole entire point.
Well, I mean, I think what's happened is that, yeah, obviously this whole issue has gotten momentum. You know, there's no doubt about that. We've seen it, you know, municipally, and then we've seen it in some of the provinces. I think, I mean, clearly this is just my opinion, but there's a lot of profile on this topic. It's a kind of grassroots topic that everyone can relate to. And I think it's given a lot of these groups more profile than possibly they had in the past on a number of other topics.
Right, so there's a self-interest on the part of environmental groups.
I think so.
Right. So I guess I'm going to take a look at this issue from the perspective of a member of the public. And on one hand, as you pointed out, the industry does have a very major self-interest in opposing this ban because you guys stand to lose potentially millions of dollars if it does go into effect. On the other hand, environmental groups, Canadian Cancer Society, you pointed out that, you know, the environmental groups could have a self-interest in this. And I can see someone saying, well, you know, it seems like, you know, even if the environmental groups do have a bit of a self-interest in raising their profile, they don't have a financial stake. So I'm going to go with that side of the equation as opposed to the industry side of the equation.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess at the end of the day, though, the question is whether it's an insect repellent, which is a pesticide, which doesn't seem to be targeted by these groups, or a pool chemical, same thing. It's a pesticide, but it's not in this current round of being targeted. Or a household cleaner, or any other product that's in people's homes, or a pharmaceutical that they take. Who's going to be responsible for assessing the safety of those products? And in most cases, those products that I just listed, it's Health Canada. And so we're a little puzzled as to why when Health Canada says that, drug A or B is okay to use, or insect repellent B or C is okay to use, but for some reason, their assessment of these urban-type lawn and garden pesticides seems to be totally ignored, and you'll find very, very few references to Health Canada on any of these detractor websites.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure why that is.
So a couple final issues. Last week, the West Coast Environmental Law Society released internal records related to the government's consultative process surrounding the cosmetic pesticide issue. And the society says that those records show a ban on pesticides enjoys a high level of public support. Your reaction to that?
Well, part of these, and we've seen these polls in the past from various groups, and this was not done as a poll. The ministry was quite clear that this was not a quantitative assessment of comments. Part of the problem is that the public doesn't realize the rigor that goes behind these products, and I'm talking not just federally, but even provincially. BC was a leader in its IPM Act that's brought into force just 6 or 7 years ago, and yet that just seems to be forgotten. And we're starting at step one again.
Right. But it seems though that there is, you know, despite the fact that this wasn't a, you know, actual poll process, this was simply a consultation process, there have been polls out there that have showed a high level of public support for. Yeah. A cosmetic pesticide ban. I guess if that's the case, if the public really wants that, in spite of the fact that maybe it's not even necessary, shouldn't politicians just go ahead and obey the will of the people in this regard?
Well, I think governments also have a responsibility to inform the public to what goes behind the assessment of these products, because the ask today is about lawn and garden products, but what about tomorrow when the same detractors ask for the same ban on agricultural products? Where will the government lean on then? Will they say, well, no, we rely on Health Canada to assess those agricultural products and make sure they're safe? So, we just stress that the expertise does not lie with these groups or even with us if people want to ignore our comments. Just where is the expertise? We think is at Health Canada with those 350 scientists.
Right. One final question, actually two. Last week I did an interview with Agriculture and Lands Minister Steve Thompson. And during that interview, he told me that any restrictions on cosmetic pesticides must recognize their use in controlling the spread of pests from the urban environment to farms. I'm wondering what you make of that comment. Is that a positive sign for your industry?
Well, I mean, I think as agriculture minister, he has to reflect the realities of agriculture. And if you talk to any agricultural group out there, especially in BC, where you've got a lot of that interface between the farms and urban areas, or suburbs anyway, it is a critical issue where you've got fruit trees, for example, in people's backyards that are a host for insects that are being controlled on the commercial orchards nearby, but that these diseases and insects are constantly being introduced from the backyard fruit trees. Of course, it's an important issue for agriculture.
Now, after the break, I'm going to speak with Andrew Gage from the West Coast Environmental Law Society. He's a staff counsel there. I'm wondering, do you have any questions for him that you'd like me to ask him?
Well, yeah, I've looked at their input into the BC consultation, and I was a little bit puzzled at some of the comments in terms of what restrictions they would like, because they seem to imply that cosmetic use pesticides are those that just cause eyesore, or you know, to protect green spaces that are just become an eyesore. But then he goes on to say, but which do not directly impact human health, the environment, or property. And I'm just confused as to how a lawn being overtaken by grubs and complete loss of that lawn or trees, for example, don't affect the value of someone's property. And the other comment I just want to quote on it, if I could, is that in Ontario, we saw the same type of polling of people supporting a ban. However, a year and a half into it, and we saw this in the spring, the flurry of media comments about this is that the public, a lot of the public didn't even realize this was happening and didn't realize the extent of what a cosmetic ban meant. And they're just there's a lot of frustration here in Ontario. People don't have the tools to control a variety of pests that are common and which do have a significant impact on their property.
I really appreciate your time this morning, Pierre. Thanks very much.
I appreciate you having me. Thank you very much, Sean.
Thank you so much. And when we come back, I'll be speaking with Andrew Gage from the West Coast Environmental Law Society. And welcome back to Public Eye Radio on CFAX 1070, Victoria's News Authority. I'm your host, Sean Holman, editor of Public Eye Online, broadcasting from British Columbia's capital city and rebroadcasting on Kootenai Co-op Radio. We've been talking about the issue of cosmetic pesticides. Should there be a ban on them? And joining me now with a different perspective than my last guest is Andrew Gage. He's staff counsel with the West Coast Environmental Law Society, and I'm pleased to have him on the show this morning. Good morning, Andrew.
Good morning, Sean.
So let's first start off with the records that you obtained last week through a Freedom of Information process. Tell me about that.
Sure. Well, the province had done this consultation of the public on cosmetic pesticides and how they should be regulated, and they'd released a summary of those consultations, and we had thought, and we weren't alone in thinking that the summary was very odd and not very useful, in that it would just say things like, there's a significant number of the public, or a significant group of people who think this, many people believe this, and it sort of reported what people had said, but no indication about how many people had said that, how intensely they said it, their reasons for saying it. So it was not very useful in terms of either the public or the Minister of Environment, who this was being done for, to get a good sense of what the issues were and why the public what the public wanted the government to do, and that's the whole point of a public consultation. So we put in a Freedom of Information request asking for all documents that they had that did sort of a quantitative analysis, which said how many people had said what, which groups were saying what, you know, what was the industry's position overall, what was the public's position overall, what was the position of the environmental community overall.
Just so you could get some kind of assessment as to how people in general felt during this whole entire process.
That's right. Which, you know, as I say, I mean, that's a major point of a consultation. Surprisingly, the documents we got back really showed that the government hadn't done that analysis. There were no documents for the minister that said, you know,
this is the people who are in favor and these are the people who are opposed.
That's right. So I initially was going to write a blog post saying, you know, the government doesn't know what the results of its own consultation are. Or maybe they're trying to hide something. But when I actually put that to a staff person in the Ministry of Environment, he was actually very helpful in trying to give me an idea of what the consultations had said. Clearly wasn't hiding. He wasn't providing the actual figures, but he was, in terms of generally what was they were seeing. I mean, he seemed very forthright in terms of sharing that information.
Right, I'm sure he got fired shortly afterwards.
I'm just joking. I was very. I think that his view was that, you know, we had requested this type of information, and he was going to help us understand what it was, and
right.
I presume the government would support him. I would hope the government.
I would
support
hope so.
Him.
Yeah.
Um, But
you never know these days, though. But anyways, continue.
And I mean, he was also very, you know, very clear on why he felt that the consultation wasn't intended to provide sort of that type of quantitative analysis. I don't really agree with many of his, explanations, but he did try to defend the fact that they weren't looking for, you know, hard numbers about what the public thought. They were looking for ideas.
In his
Yeah, I mean, his figures suggested that basically all of the many, many petition responses received, the form letters received from people and emails received from people were almost uniformly, well, not uniform, I mean, the 85-90% in favor of a cosmetic pesticide ban. The more detailed responses, which focused on you know, specifically addressing the discussion paper the province had.
Right. These are the people. These are the people who actually wrote in to express their not just their opinion, but also
respond,
you know,
in detail.
Respond in detail. Yeah.
They were more less extreme, but still about 50%. And he said he was just guessing at the figures, but about 50% of the people who responded, of those 800 and more people that responded in that way, were in favor of a cosmetic pesticide ban. 25% were in favor of doing nothing, and then 25% didn't want a ban but did want more control of these pesticides.
Right. Now, in fairness, though, that doesn't necessarily show a high level of public support for a cosmetic pesticide ban. What it shows is that those who participated in the public consultation process supported a ban, yes?
Yes, but I mean, the government consults the public in order to, yes, to a degree. I mean, the government consults the public in order to find out what the public feels, the intensity of the views. We know from polls that 76% of British Columbians would like a cosmetic pesticide ban. In this case, you know, 88% were calling for it in the consultation. So it very much supports the idea that there is that level of concern out there. And then, in fact, more people are actually, people feel about it so intensely that they're willing to participate in the consultations and get their views known, at least the opponents of the cosmetic pesticides are, the proponents of the ban.
Right. Now, I just finished having Pierre Patel on the show. He's the Regulatory Affairs Director for CropLife Canada, mm-hmm. the association representing the pesticide industry. And one of the things that he said was that, well, yes, there's a high level of public support now, but when an actual ban comes in place, as it did in Ontario, there's a lot of people who say, wait a minute, this isn't really what we ask for. So, I mean, how confident are you that those numbers would remain solid after a ban actually came into place?
Well, I mean, I haven't seen any polling data out of Ontario. I don't know if he shared any with.
No, he didn't. Although, you know, that being said, though, rarely do organizations actually poll on something that's actually happened. But they like to do speculative stuff, like talk radio. But
what I can tell you is that the after the Ontario ban came into force, monitoring of the levels of many of the cosmetic pesticides in local streams showed an 80% drop in some of those pesticides, some of the key pesticides that were being monitored for. So it was, I can certainly say it's had an impact on what's showing up in the ecosystem, in the environment.
Right.
In terms of what the level of, so, I mean, from that alone, I think it's a huge success story.
Yeah.
Now, whether the public, you know, still is willing to say, yes, we're still behind it because of those environmental accomplishments and wins, or whether we think that, you know, we've lost out on our opportunity to not have dandelions in our lawns, I don't know what the polling says. I'm not in Ontario. I don't have a good sense of the pulse there. I would hope that most Ontarians would recognize that they're having a significant benefit, and that there are, you know, and are finding the ways to achieve the cosmetic looks that they want, and as well as reevaluating the whole what they find important. I mean, the whole point of a cosmetic pesticide ban is the focus on cosmetics is not that these pesticides are somehow less safe. I mean, that's not the case at all. The point is that they are unnecessary. They're a cosmetic pesticides or cosmetic pesticide use is use of pesticides in order to make things look good. It's aesthetic. It doesn't have any particular economic or health benefits. And the question is, why are we subjecting the environment and humans to pesticides so someone can have a nice-looking lawn?
Right.
And one of the hopes is that by having these bans in place is, yes, people turn to alternatives to find other ways of doing these, getting nice lawns. But, that many people will go, well, maybe it's not that important that I actually have my lawn entirely free of dandelions.
Right. Although Pierre Patel would say, if he was here right now, that those cosmetic pesticides do allow people to maintain their property to a certain standard, that is required to get the full economic value out of them, and in some cases actually preserve them if there's a serious pest problem.
So
if for example, there was a serious pest problem at a property, right?
Most of the bans do provide for an exception for noxious weeds.
Right.
Weeds that are very difficult to control. But there's a difference between wanting to have the perfect lawn. Now, that is still achievable. The strongest critiques of pesticide use and that I've encountered are people in the organic lawn care industry. And they say, we can do all of this stuff. And it's just that pesticides are an easy cheat, right? They're a way to not have to worry about whether or not your soil is healthy because you can just spray something on it.
Mm-hmm.
If you actually have to do this organically, then you have to look at the health of your soil. You have to look after your land, or else you're not going to have a healthy lawn or a healthy backyard. And that's maybe more difficult, but maybe better for the environment and better for the health of the community in the long run.
What about the position that's being taken by the industry that all of these chemicals have gone through the assessment process, the federal assessment process by Health Canada?
Yeah.
They've all checked out, so why is it really scientifically necessary for their ban to be put in place?
Well, what you have to understand is everyone says, these pesticides are safe because Health Canada has approved them. That's not what Health Canada is expected to do. Health Canada is required to look at these pesticides and figure out whether the risks are acceptable. Now, acceptable means, given the economic and the benefit we expect to achieve from this, are the environmental risks and the health risks ones that we can live with? It doesn't mean they're safe. And they're very clear on that. In fact, it's actually illegal for a pesticide company to advertise that their product is safe because it's been approved by Health Canada. Health Canada has an extremely difficult job. I've got beefs with some of what they do and don't do and stuff like that. But they're even giving them the benefit of the doubt on everything. Their job is to look at chemicals which are designed to kill things or suppress them. Right? It's designed to kill particular plants or particular insects, and not only look at the immediate toxicity of them, which is that can be done, certainly can be done, but also project whether or not they're going to cause cancer, 30 years from now, or 40 years from now. It's extremely difficult, and we see that. Diazinon was available for residential pesticide use until 2 or 3 years ago, just a few years ago, and it's been withdrawn because Health Canada now recognizes that they've been approving a pesticide for use in people's houses and in people's lawns that's actually very unsafe.
So what you seem to be suggesting is that this cosmetic pesticide ban is necessary because Health Canada's cost-benefit analysis has been correct.
Well, no, it's because Health Canada doesn't know everything, and they're dealing with pesticides that are extremely difficult to work out. But not only just the pesticide by itself, but also the pesticide in combination with other pesticides.
Right, but they're not using enough of a precautionary principle. That's what seems to be coming down to.
A lot of it has to do with the precautionary principle, the idea that the onus should be on industry and the people saying we should be using these pesticides before we use them. But it's also based on a historic record. We know that there are, time and time again, there are pesticides, there are products that Health Canada has approved that they've withdrawn because they now recognize the health impacts of it. That's not precautionary. That's just, that happens.
Yeah.
It's the nature of a complicated system. Health Canada does try to test for cancer, but it's extremely difficult to do. They get it wrong from time to time. They don't generally test for developmental impacts of the pesticides. They don't generally test for whether they're endocrine disruptors. There's a host of health impacts that are really almost just emerging in the science that are extremely difficult to test for.
Right. Now, one final question, because we are running out of time. Last week, I did an interview with Agriculture and Lands Minister Steve Thompson. During that interview, he told me any restrictions on cosmetic pesticides must recognize their use in controlling the spread of pests from the urban environment to farms. I guess I'm wondering quickly, what do you make of that comment?
Well, I mean, of course, you know, the call for cosmetic pesticides bans are not intended to restrict agriculture. I mean, that being said, I mean, obviously, I think that most people in the environmental community and many people in the public would like to see more farms moving towards more agriculture, sorry, more organic models and reducing their pesticide use wherever possible. The interface between the urban and the agricultural lands is very, or the residential and agricultural lands is very interesting and a difficult role. I mean, certainly people, it goes the other way. People who are living next to farms are being exposed to agricultural pesticides, which are, there is no doubt, are stronger and more significant, and they don't have the benefit of the safety gear that the farmers and their staff are supposed to have. I think at the end of the day, I mean, people's health needs to be first and foremost, there are ways to control these. It's not like there's any current requirement that a landowner who has a tree or something on their backyard treated with pesticides. They can be invoked under the Plant Protection Act, but as a general rule, there's not a general requirement for landowners to spray to prevent this. But you know, in some ways, it's a red herring.
Yeah.
Because most of these pesticides, in many ways, it is. I mean, the cosmetic pesticides, for the most part, are not being applied to control weeds that are significant in the in the agricultural industry. It's not,
yeah.
You know, the example of a fruit tree is kind of spurious, because I mean, that's arguably not even cosmetic if you're controlling something for you know, it may be that it would be caught under a ban just because it's relatively minor use.
Actually, unfortunately, we are going to have to leave things there.
Yeah.
But I really do appreciate your time this morning, Andrew. I'll continue covering this issue and continue paying attention to the work that you guys are doing.
Thanks very much.
Thanks so much.